Yo, Chris, what you doing out of school?
Yo, man, they just suspended me, McBoo.
Word, they suspended the teacher?
Yeah, man, I'm getting so sick of this, man. They teaching us about nothing, man. You know what the bottom line is for black people out here? It's quite simple. You must learn.
8 o'clock on the nose on a Friday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Do we have Harm on the line?
Not yet. I'm going to call him.
Okay. Harmon Dial of The Athletic is going to join us in just a moment here. Reminder, keep submitting all your What We Learns and ask us anything. 650-650 is the text line. It's the Dunbar Lumber text line. A lot more to get into on this program. No Canucks games for the foreseeable future. In case you missed it, and I know that some people, you people, aren't necessarily in their cars or listening to the radio at 6:30 in the morning when we do the rundown, and then again, maybe at 7 o'clock. Canucks games are wiped out until at least next Thursday. So this weekend's games, Saturday was supposed to be against Edmonton. Sunday was supposed to be against the Jets. Those are out. The Tuesday, April 6th game, the return date against those same Winnipeg Jets, that's out. And that's because COVID has hit the team hard and potentially even harder than we might have originally thought. Mm-hmm. Adam Gaudette and Travis Hamonic are on the COVID-19 protocol list. There is an unnamed coach that has also entered COVID-19 protocols.
And we had Rick Dhaliwal on earlier in the show, and he's heard that more Canucks have it.
Right. So we will wait on that. Every day, the NHL puts out its list of players that have been entered into the COVID-19 protocol. So we can wait on that. And again, this stuff usually happens after we're off the air. We're on from 6 to 9. Usually these things happen around noon Eastern. So as soon as we're off the air, don't worry, though. Scott Rintoul and Karen Sermon, the Surtoul Show, we'll have you covered for anything that comes about with regards to the Canucks and COVID-19. But we can tell you definitively right now that the next three games are out. They are hopeful to get back into action on Thursday, April the 8th, against the Calgary Flames. Let's go to the phone lines now. Joining us, good to have him back on the program, the boy genius from The Athletic Vancouver, Harmon Dial, now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Harm? How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're good, thanks. We were talking quite a bit throughout the show, not about your most recent piece, but the one that went out right at the end of March, very befitting for the trade deadline. It's titled, "It Can Be an Effing Nightmare, the Inside Stories of What It's Like When NHL Players Got Traded." So I read through it. It's great. It's got a lot of good anecdotes. I did not realize the depth to which JT Miller bounced around North America over like a 2.5 year span. And you illustrated a really cool thing in there. Maybe not so cool for the Millers, but when he got traded to Tampa Bay and signed, he thought he was going to be there for a pretty long time. I mean, you sign a lengthy deal like he did, you assume that they have you in their plans and you're going to stick around. But that didn't prove to be the case for JT Miller.
Yeah, I mean, going back to New York, it was an absolute adventure, right? So let's go back to the 2018 trade deadline. He's with the New York Rangers, and he's on the airplane, ironically, to Vancouver when he finds out that he's part of the Ryan McDonagh trade to Tampa Bay. And so at the time, you know, Miller has to go straight to Tampa because he's on the road, doesn't have a chance to go back to New York to gather his belongings. And so his 8-month pregnant wife, Natalie, now has to do all of the unfurnishing, all of the packing, and is in a mad dash to travel, because if she waits, then according to JT, she wouldn't have been allowed to actually go down to Tampa. So she had to do all that while pregnant. And then so they land in Tampa. They know that their contract's expiring, JT's is, at the end of the season. So they're careful. They just rent a place. They don't even unload the storage box from New York. So they're careful about it. And then they signed the big 5-year extension with limited no trade protection for the final 4 years. And so they think, great, like our future is set. And then so they go about and build their dream home. And then at the 2019 draft, just a year later, Miller's moved again, this time to Vancouver. And that's just as they had, again, just a little over a year late, year ago, they had just unpacked the storage box and everything from New York, right? Because they left it there for a while JT was still playing out his contract, and so it was definitely a ton of moving for him there. And Fortunately, like, they had bought in a pretty good place in Tampa. So, you know, JT said they were able to sell it pretty easily. But, yeah, there was a lot of moving there. And he called it a nightmare. And it was a pretty good adventure there.
Some people's nightmares are other people's dreams. Like, oh, I had to build my dream house. Oh, I've never done that. I've never had a dream. I've never had a house.
And so you alluded to it there. Like, the deal happened. It was like moments before his no trade clause was about to kick in, right? Like, they had that really small window to move JT Miller out of Tampa Bay. But you think, like, well, that's not going to happen to me because I just signed a 5-year extension here. You do sort of allow yourself to get settled in, even though you're doing a job where you can be moved at a moment's notice. But
does he not look at cap friendly? Do the players not look at cap friendly and
I
go?
I guess he just, you know,
like,
do
they
think
not?
About it, right?
Like, they're like, hey, wow, we got less salary here.
If you sign a 5-year deal and 4 years are covered with trade protection, you're kind of thinking, like, okay.
Yeah,
I've got a pretty good shot of you staying.
What about when you're
haul.
Not playing up in the lineup like JT Miller wasn't doing regularly?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you actually think, like, I might get traded here?
But you've got to remember, when Miller joined from New York, I think he was close to a point per game down the stretch.
Right.
He was playing with Stamkos at the mm-hmm. time. And the way it works is, like, because, you know, it was a pretty similar thing for Nate Schmidt, too, where when you sign these big extensions, like, the way the organization is talking you up, they're describing you as a core piece. You think you're going to be a huge part of it. In Miller's case, again, he's probably thinking he's riding shotgun with Stamkos over the lifetime of this contract. He probably doesn't think that he's going to be buried down lineup in kind of a third line role.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a similar thing for Nate Schmidt. When he had kind of signed with Vegas, where when you sign that deal, the way that they talk it up, you think that you're there, and you don't think that that there's any chance you're getting traded, especially considering, hey, only 1 year and then the no trade kicks in. So I'm sure he would have at that point thought he was relatively secure. But it's funny how things change, especially, you know, the common theme in both Miller and Schmidt's case was just the teams had to shed salary space to accommodate other pieces. And that's kind of the nature of this sport, right? Where it's not just about who you are as a player, because I'm sure Tampa would have loved to keep JT Miller.
Sure.
I'm sure Vegas would have loved to keep Nate Schmidt. But in this league right now, you're trading contracts just as much as you're trading players.
It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking with the boy genius, Harm Dial. Since we're talking about JT Miller and how you mentioned he was the third line center in Tampa Bay, we've been talking this week a little bit about the future of the Canucks position 3C, the third line center. Adam Gaudette might not be the answer there. Cole Lind might get on an audition there. I don't think Brandon Sutter is the long-term answer there, especially since he's a pending unrestricted free agent. What about the idea of having Pettersson, Horvat, and JT Miller down the middle?
It sounds great in theory. My issue is I'm not sure you have enough winger depth to accommodate it right now, because if you, let's say, shift Miller to center, and we're presuming at this point, or I am anyway, that after this Demko extension, you know, the AAV clocks in a little bit higher than I would have imagined, given that they went long, obviously, instead of the bridge. I'm not sure that there's much space to re-sign Tanner Pearson, which is honestly, like, they shouldn't be looking to re-sign him, I think, given where he's at in his career. But what that kind of does is your left wing depth is really, really shallow, and you just run out of guys to kind of play with your marquee centers at that point, right? Like, who's going to then be playing with Pettersson? If you look at last year, you know, them in the bubble, their top six was Miller and Pearson on the left side. You're not going to have either guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pod Colson is going to come in, and you could probably so then shift Hoglander back to the left wing if you want, but that's only one piece there. And this is already a club that on the wings, especially on the left side, they're a little bit shallow. So I think it's one of those situations, especially where if you have, you know, Pettersson, Horvat, Miller on separate lines, the way that this roster is kind of built, you know that with Vancouver's forward lineup, it's still going to be top heavy. And so if you have a top heavy lineup, you're generally going to want to lean on your top six a little bit more heavily. And so if you have Horvat, Miller, Pettersson on three different lines, I just don't think you're deep enough to be able to ice a really solid third line. So what I'm saying is, if you have Miller on a third line, number one, I think you're going to find it challenging to find wingers for Pettersson and Horvat that consistently stick.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, with Miller on a third line, are you going to be in a position to give him 18, 19, 20 minutes a night again? And so that's kind of the...
You could if he's penalty killing. He'd get some more out of that.
For sure, that's fair. I think, though, that just generally, you know, I think if you're going to be separating those guys, that you need to be confident playing those three lines the same amount of minutes. I think that would kind of be the logic behind it. But again, given just that I don't think they're deep enough to do that, I'm not sure that it would be really practical enough, even though on paper, the idea of it sounds great.
I'm just wondering what they're going to do with that third line, because we've been talking about that third line for a while now and how you want to have a third line that tips the balance, right? If you like your top six, but your bottom six stinks, it's hard to be a good team, right? You can be an okay team, but it's hard to be a good team. So how can the Canucks go from having this top six that has potential to be quite good to building something, some sort of weapon? Like, what is the ideal player, do you think, for the Canucks at the third line center position?
Right. So they need kind of the player that Jim Benning thought he had when he initially acquired Brandon Sutter, which is to say, a two-way play driver who can kill penalties, chip in with secondary offense, can legitimately drive play, take on tougher matchups, because...
Like JT Miller.
Yeah. I mean,
they need another JT Miller.
Obviously not to that caliber, if we're being realistic here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, because look, it's not just what the production you're looking to get in a vacuum out of a 3C role. It's, you want to take some of the burden off of Bo Horvat,
yes,
right? Because if you look at him, if you look at his matchups relative to top six centermen around the league, or even just centermen, period, he's been over the last couple of years, I think, in the 98th percentile for quality of competition. And we've seen, even with Pearson kind of sticking, like, he still hasn't really had high-end top six wingers to work with. And unless that changes, you want to take some of that burden off, especially because I don't know about you guys, but even with how well Horvat plays offensively, and even though he's great in the draw, I still don't think he's, you know, I don't think the defensive side of his game is still one of his strengths, despite the success that he had in juniors. He's a natural matchup center.
He's not a good penalty killer either.
Right. And so I think, you know, it even becomes one of those things where if you can acquire the right 3C that can, you know, play those tough two-way minutes, then it unlocks Horvat's offensive potential where you're able to free him up. And kind of that was the discussion coming into the season where it was like, okay, if we can give the long line some of the tougher minutes, well, then now, you know, maybe Miller can play, or maybe Horvat can play with Höglander too.
Mm.
The problem there, obviously, was that kind of Pearson taking a step back, and, you know, the Lotto line really struggled to start the season, so Horvat still got the tough matchups. And so I think that's why it's really important, and I think you're going to have to get creative here.
In theory, could you find one or two or two or three decent wingers in free agency or in trades that don't have a huge impact on the cap, and then maybe that helps out your issue with not having enough wingers to go Pettersson, Horvat, and Miller down the middle? Because I'm just looking at this situation and trying to be creative, and I'm trying to think of where are the bargains. And I think most of the bargains would be on the wing. I don't think you're going to find, or it's going to be very difficult to find, a bargain that can play third line center, because anyone that can play third line center is generally fairly coveted and is going to either cost a lot to acquire in a trade, or they're going to cost a lot in free agency.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely one way of approaching it as well. And that's where, like, you look at the number of teams that are going to be crunched expansion-wise. That's where, like, when Dranster and I kind of put together a list of forwards that could end up being, like, you could go to a team and say, you're probably going to lose that guy. Could we acquire him for, say, 80 cents on the dollar? A lot of those guys were wingers, right? And they're kind of your typical suspects team-wise, where a team like St. Louis, a guy like Zach Sanford, looks like he could be kind of like that middle six complementary piece to play up your lineup on the wing. And some of the other ones are just younger guys that you think could potentially break out in top nine role, like Matthew Joseph. Or I really like Warren Fogle in Carolina. So I definitely see that angle where I think acquiring a middle six piece, especially on the trade market, could be one of those, could be like, if you can acquire two or three of those guys, or maybe two more realistically, and then say Pod Colson comes in, mm-hmm. and maybe he has a similar kind of rookie impact as Nils Höglander, then maybe you're a little bit more confident in your winger depth to be able to support the idea of having Miller down the middle as your 3C. So I could definitely see that being a possibility. I mean, one of the other options,
or maybe is Cole Lind on the wing.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, that's an option too.
Yeah,
absolutely. Also, I mean, like I kind of mentioned, St. Louis is one of those teams that's crunched with kind of quality depth up front. They're likely in a situation where they've got Oscar Sundqvist, who kind of fits that mold as a third line center, not the flashiest name, not the highest end producer. But if you're looking for a natural kind of fit there that may not break the bank, then maybe that's a possibility to consider. But yeah, I think more likely you're going to find it a lot easier to acquire middle six kind of winger than you are a center.
We're speaking to Harmon Dial of the Athletic Vancouver here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Harmon, I'm curious to get your thoughts on what you think this year's trade deadline is going to look like. Maybe not even necessarily from a Canucks perspective, but just overall. We spoke to Greg Wyshynski yesterday, and he has a piece up calling it potentially the most extraordinary trade deadline in league history because of the expansion factor with Seattle, the fact that the further teams go this year in the playoffs, the more money their owners stand to lose as opposed to gain.
Right.
And he brought up a really interesting point about the diminishing value of first-round picks, that when talking to a bunch of GMs, they didn't really have a good sense of what this draft was going to look like other than it's the great unknown, and this might be the year that you want to part with picks because their value might be lower. So I'm curious, how do you think this deadline's going to play out?
I think just generally what we've seen so far, my suspicion is that it's probably going to be a buyer's market where, as you mentioned, I think for starters, just the fact that you don't get that playoff revenue from the home games, the deeper you go in the playoffs, like that's just not going to incentivize teams as much to be aggressive, to go all in. And I mean, if you follow that logic, I mean, look at kind of how the Canucks approach things this offseason, right? They looked at this pandemic. They looked at, okay, we're not going to have fans in stands. And look, there obviously is merit to, if you go deep in the playoffs, then for next season, you're probably going to have a better shot in terms of your bottom line for season tickets. But like the Canucks looked at the season and they said, it's probably better for us to be a little bit conservative, or at least ownership did. And they were kind of tighter with the purse strings. And I think a lot of potential buyers teams, you know, buying teams could kind of look at it in a similar way. Now, towards the flip side, to kind of play devil's advocate, I think you're also seeing teams like Nashville is kind of playing itself back into the playoff race. So all of a sudden, a guy like Matthias Ekholm, mm-hmm. who we thought might move at the deadline, now he may not, you know, be available. So it's kind of interesting. I still generally think that you're going to see probably depressed asset prices. Like if you were the Canucks, for example, and you're looking to move, let's presume Tanner Pearson was healthy. I don't think he would have, or this is again, just me guessing. I wouldn't have been looking at a guy like that and saying he's going to return, say, a second round pick. just think that with the number of the lack of teams that are maybe going to be aggressively going all in, that you're probably going to be looking at, again, depressed asset prices, especially for especially given the quarantine, right? Because the idea of when you acquire a rental, you're going to have that quarantine where you're not going to be able to take advantage of them. And again, because of the shortened season, you're not going to have as many games with the guy, right? In a normal time usually it's a February deadline, you're going to have a solid chunk of games to integrate them into your lineup, where a lot of teams like a team like Vancouver is almost already out of the playoff race,
right?
Where in a time like this in February, some teams are still optimistic about being able to acquire a guy. And maybe it would even be a team like Vancouver that would look at their playoff odds and they're maybe 25% and say, maybe we can acquire at the deadline and we have time to integrate a piece into our lineup and he can help us out. There's just not a lot of runway for a team to be able to bring a guy in. And so there's less value to be gained over the second half of the season. So I think it's going to be a buyer's market, but again, it's an unprecedented landscape, and who knows how this whole thing is going to shake out.
Harm, great stuff today, bud. Thanks a lot for doing this. I assume the Canucks will play hockey at some point in the future. So when they start doing that again, we'll talk again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks you. Buddy. That's Harman Dial from the Athletic Vancouver, the boy genius here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Before we go to break, I got to mention this, and it's a college basketball thing, and it's a coaching thing again.
Okay.
You know Bill Self?
Yes.
The head coach at the University of Kansas?
Mm-hmm.
He signed a contract extension.
Mm-hmm. What's it worth?
It's a lifetime contract. He signed for the rest of his life.
Okay. Are there any numbers?
Not yet.
Does he have to coach into his 80s or 90s?
It's a new...
Bill, you're under contract.
It's a new five-year rolling agreement, which at the end of each five-year segment automatically adds 1 year at the conclusion of each season for the remainder of his life.
Hmm. How old is he?
He is in his 50s. I'm going to dig into this a little bit deeper because I don't know much about lifetime contracts. You don't see them very often in sports, especially at the coaching level where guys are kind of turned over quite often. I know college basketball is a little different,
but yeah.
A lifetime contract. It'd be nice to have that kind of job security.
Yes, it would.
Lots more to get to on the program. We're going to do some What We Learns and Ask Us Anything.
You have to do the Office Space stuff now because Dom doesn't know about it.
I know. We'll get to it
all live.
We'll get to it at the break.
I'm like, moo.
Halford Brough, Sportsnet, 650.
Look, guys, I'm hearing that more Canuck players have tested positive. I'm not surprised. I'm trying to get it confirmed. But when the league announces the COVID list today, could be an interesting number in Vancouver. That's what I've been told. I'm working on it right now. But think about it, guys. Gaudette's at the game day skate. Hamonic's at the game day skate. You got a coach at the game day skate. And when this all happened, I did, you know, somebody said to me, he said, Rick, how could you not have more players get it?
Well, Ricky D appears to be on the nose. That was earlier in the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Rick Dhaliwal came on and started the conversation by saying he has heard from his sources that multiple Canucks had subsequently tested positive for COVID-19 following Adam Gaudette and Travis Hamonic going on the league's COVID-19 protocol list. According to TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger moments ago on Twitter, I'll just read verbatim, "Tough news in Vancouver," Dreger writes, "a number of additional positive COVID-19 cases among the Canucks, multiple players, and staff." So once again, we'll wait and see what's going to transpire.
Oh, nice. Transpire. Yeah.
We know what we've been told from Dhaliwal and Dreger. At 9 o'clock, I presume we will get the official word from the NHL, at least in terms of what players have been entered onto their COVID-19 protocol list. Two Canucks already in Hamonic and Gaudette. We will wait and see how many more will be added. A reminder, four games right now have been postponed for the Canucks. That includes the game from two nights ago against Calgary, which got wiped out just moments before the two teams were set to take the ice. Saturday's game against Edmonton off, Sunday's game against the Jets off, and next Tuesday's game against the Jets also postponed. Right now, the hope is that everything goes smoothly, people get healthy, they get back and test negative, and the Canucks can resume their season on April 8th on Thursday night against the Calgary Flames.
Isn't this what the taxi squad is for? In theory?
In theory. I guess right now we're looking at
so
how
Cole Lind is part of that now.
How large the numbers would be. Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll find out later today. Okay, let's fire up the dot matrix, Dom, because we have to print out a whole bunch of what we learns and ask us anythings. I like our new dot matrix.
Look, I went all out. I went to Radio Shack. I splashed some cash.
It's
all
really
right?
Nice.
Yeah.
It's much more soothing than the other one. It was jarring.
Industrial strength.
I flagged this one from Devin in Saskatoon, and he texted it in at 7 o'clock, but I wanted to get to this one because I had a pretty decent answer for this. So Devin in Saskatoon with an Ask Us Anything. What's the craziest NHL or behind-the-scenes story when you guys were working at NBC? I don't know if this is necessarily the craziest, but it always sticks out in my mind. So we were at the University of Michigan in 2014 for the Winter Classic.
Mm-hmm.
But what a lot of people forget is USA Hockey was making that a big deal because they were in Michigan, like one of the homes of hockey in the U.S. It was also the day that they were going to announce the roster for the 2014 U.S. men's hockey team that was going to Sochi.
Right. Wasn't there a big Leafs signing that day, too?
Dion Phaneuf.
That's right.
Signed his extension. So there was a lot going on. There was a lot of news. So one of the benefits of working at NBC was we got, because we were a rights holder, especially with the Olympics, we got the roster. I think it was almost 48 hours before it was going to be announced to the general public. Mm-hmm. But it was like under a strict embargo. They're like, if this gets out, you guys are going to be catch major hell for it. So we're going through the roster and we're like, huh, they didn't take Bobby Ryan. Interesting. So we had already written about 3 articles off it. We were just waiting to press go, right? And one of them was like the biggest snubs of the U.S. Olympic team. What we didn't know at the time was that USA Hockey let Scott Burnside and Kevin Allen from ESPN and USA Today sit in on the meetings that they had with the selection committee, which included a very verbose Brian Burke.
Yes.
So what happened on the day of is we're sitting in the media room. You've got this great Winter Classic that just got played. So there's a bunch of news around that. David Poile is up there at the podium ready to announce what the team is going to be. At the exact same moment, everyone in the media center is reading this article.
Yes, just got released.
In which Brian Burke calls Bobby Ryan gutless or whatever it was. He said he didn't know how to spell the word intense and that I never should have taken him. I never should have drafted a number 2 overall. And he's carving guys left and right. And so all of a sudden, everyone in the media center, while it's supposed to be this crowning moment for USA Hockey and David Poile,
it's like, I've got a question. I'm just halfway through an article that I'm reading. So the and US, it seems as though.
You can see the collective panic falling over the faces of the USA Hockey people, because I don't know if they vetted the article before it went out. And if you don't know the article I'm talking about, I don't think you can actually find it anymore. It's been pulled from the ESPN site. I don't know what reason for, but it was a major, major blow and egg on the face moment for.
David Poile had to apologize to Bobby Ryan.
Yeah. Like, and so we're sitting there, and I'm like, this is amazing, right? I got Steve Simmons from the Toronto Star is sitting beside me, and he's telling me all these, like, additional anecdotes that he heard about why they didn't take Dustin Byfuglien on the team and all this other stuff. And I'm like, so it was crazy to watch that unfold in real time. That was a real, like, standout moment at NBC.
So Drager is now reporting that he's hearing 8 players plus staff.
Wow.
Among the positive cases in Vancouver.
That's a lot.
8 players plus staff among the positive cases. So I don't know when the Canucks are going to be able to play next.
Right. That's a lot of medical clearances that are going to go on.
Again, they've already had 4 games postponed, 1 against Calgary, 2 against Winnipeg, and 1 against Edmonton. Optimistically, it was a report, it was in a statement yesterday, the Canucks, their next game was going to be next Thursday, which is only, 6 days from now in Calgary against the Flames. Does that seem realistic that they're going to be able to play that? This is a team-wide outbreak. What's the history among the teams with like these team-wide outbreaks? What's the biggest COVID outbreak that we've seen
Dallas
in the NHL?
Stars beginning
Dallas
of the year.
Early?
I think they got into the teens.
Okay.
And I don't mean like the age group. I mean like the number of players.
Yeah.
The number of players that I'm just talking about just the numbers of guys. But they were sidelined for I think it was upwards of 10 days. Like they missed a bunch of games at the beginning of the season because it ran right through their room.
But it was a lot easier to reschedule back then because you had the whole season ahead of you.
Right. I mean, I would at this stage of the game, and I hate trying to predict and I hate trying to make definitive statements in COVID times, but I would safely assume that the Canucks season is going to extend beyond May 8th, which right now is their scheduled last game of the season against Calgary. I mean, the NHL has already pushed its end of year to the 11th. That's 3 days longer than they expected to go. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe we talked to Pierre LeBrun about this a few months ago when they were mapping out the season, that they kind of consciously left a buffer week, for lack of a better term, at the end of the season because they knew that this was going to be an inevitability. They were going to have to make up games at the end of the year.
Let's do some Ask Us Anythings while we wait for further updates on the Vancouver Canucks and their COVID situation. Again, it's been reported. Darren Dreger and our own, not our own, Rick Dhaliwal. Used to be Rick Dhaliwal.
Check TV's Rick Dhaliwal.
Check TV's Rick Dhaliwal. Dreger was the one that came out with the exact number. Eight players he's reporting plus staff tested positive. So this is an outbreak. COVID outbreak on the Vancouver Canucks. So we'll wait for further updates on that.
Ask Us Anythings.
No, we'll wait for further updates
on
that.
Ask Us Anythings. Let's go.
Yes.
You got one?
John from Delta. Yeah. Ask Us Anything. Do you think Benning will actually be able to do anything to weaponize his cap space going into the expansion draft? If so, will he finally be able to load up and picks, being that he is, you know, a scout? Well, he doesn't have cap space.
Yeah, what's there to
weaponize? It's not cap space that he could weaponize. It's protected spots.
Yeah, that's
they have a number of, especially on the blue line, because I don't believe they need to protect Quinn Hughes. They'll protect Nate Schmidt, I imagine.
Yep.
And then after that, you're kind of like, well, are you really worried about protecting Tyler Myers? Probably not. You know, I think if someone were to take Tyler Myers off the Canucks, well, Jim Benning probably doesn't want that because then he's got to go out and find another defenseman. But you're in a decent situation there because you don't have to protect Quinn Hughes. This expansion draft, and I feel like we need to brand it in the media as less of a, hey, I hope we don't lose a good player, because they won't.
Okay.
And more as, this is an opportunity.
Sure.
This is an opportunity. If you've got protected spots, you can weaponize those spots.
Right.
And I don't want to use the term weaponize. Just, we can just say we use those spots
sure.
to their advantage.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Sure. Right, because the last go-round for the Canucks, and we've joked about this before, the expansion draft was the easiest thing that they had to deal with.
Yeah, trade Hanson, bada boom.
So straightforward, yeah. Right? Take one of our guys, we lose Spezza, okay, we'll wake up in the morning and we'll be fine with it. Like, it was easy.
Yeah. I think it's going to be easy this year too.
Right, but they didn't
have to protect it.
Right, but they didn't even entertain any other options. Mm. I just think it was just so
like even
by
up
numbers.
Front, even up front. I don't have the projection in front of me right now, right. But seven players you can protect up front. You can go 7-3, seven forwards and three defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
So we already talked about the defense. Who are the seven forwards? Like obviously, Pettersson, Horvat. JT Miller.
Yep.
Does Hoglander need to be protected?
Not if he's on his ELC, right?
I don't think it has anything to do with the ELCs.
It's more the years of service as a professional. Yeah.
I just don't think
because
the thing is, you know, a year ago you might have been like, well, they'll have to protect Gaudette and Jake. You're like, nah, I don't have to protect those guys now. If they lose Jake, you know, it's almost like it's a bad contract that goes off the books.
Right. And remember, you can only lose one guy, right? I mean, that's what a lot of people, I think, were tripping over themselves at the previous expansion draft. It just, you can only lose one guy. Like, people moving heaven and earth to try and protect all these different players. The reality is they can only pluck one. Maybe sometimes it's like to keep KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And that's what the Canucks did last time. We have an inordinate amount of Ask Us Anythings about air fryers. People really want us to go down this road again. So just prior to being booted off the air at 10:40, Jason went out and purchased an air fryer and then used it. And the response from the listenership was overwhelming. There was some sort of Venn diagram of sports radio listeners and owning air fryers, which I don't think was that surprising. Now, have you gone down the culinary road of experimenting with the air fryer?
I've done a few things in it, but I'm very impressed with how it does wings.
So you've gone down that road?
Oh, multiple times with wings, yes. It's so easy.
And really good?
Yeah.
Dom, people are asking about your thoughts. Now, you live that keto life.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I do.
Do you know I tried keto once?
Yeah, we discussed this at Cactus.
A day and a half it lasted.
I'm shocked.
I got so hungry. And I'm like, I cannot eat any more bacon and cheese. Like, I just can't.
I live on that.
Bacon and cheese.
That's my fuel.
Well, you can have avocado. I don't want that.
Yeah.
So who doesn't love avocado?
It's not about liking.
I want it on a sandwich.
Right.
Right?
You know there's such a thing as keto bread, right?
I don't want to eat keto bread.
It's the same thing.
And you know what? I don't know if I want to go into ketosis. It sounds dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, you're also...
I'm in ketosis.
Ralph, you're also pretty lean.
Yeah.
So,
most people use it for weight loss, right?
Yeah.
Like how much weight did you lose?
I lost 70 pounds.
You lost 70 pounds, and you look fantastic.
Thank you. I didn't.
What I wanted to do was... quit the ups and the downs. Like I would like get high blood sugar, have a ton of energy, and then I would just crash hard. And I would immediately go for the carbs. Right? Like when you're really hungry, you're not like, I would love an avocado right now. you're like, give me a sandwich, give me 30 cookies. Yep. Or at least that's what I'm like.
You know what? That's crazy you say that. I've been trained out of that. Now when I'm hungry, I'm like, get me like a roll of salami, some cheese, and like some peppers, and let's go to town.
But I'd be like, where are the crackers? But you don't even get the crackers, though.
No, no crackers.
Keto crackers.
What are keto crackers made of?
It's made of salami.
Flax.
It's made of what?
Flax.
Flax.
Flax?
Yeah.
Flax.
You Gilford Gottfried?
I'm the Aflac duck. These crackers are made of flax.
All right, one final segment to go on the Halford and Brough Show. We'll leave a few minutes on the other side, so this won't be one of these throwaway segments. We are waiting to hear some more news on the Vancouver Canucks COVID situation. This is going to be the big story of the day. It's been reported that up to 8 players plus staff have tested positive. It is an outbreak for the Vancouver Canucks. They've already had 4 games postponed. If we're betting on things, I think they're going to have more games postponed. So we might not see the Vancouver Canucks in action for quite a while. Is it the Halford and Brough curse? Probably. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Above and beyond.
.846 on a Friday. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Final segment of the final show of our first week back on the air. And boy, have we had fun.
It has been great to be back.
Good. Just agree with me there.
And thank you for all the texts into the show, tweets, the encouraging ones. Mostly encouraging, I would say.
Well, yeah, I'd say like 90% encouraging, which is a good number for us.
It's a record high.
Another one of our longtime listeners, Justin from Abbey, good friend of the program, texts in regularly, did a bunch of great work for us when we did the Power Hour Live with Botch at the Rio Theater, made a bunch of hockey cards of us. Anyway, Justin writes in with an Ask Us Anything. What was your biggest reflection during your time off? So we went on...
You only watch TV, though. Like
We went on Overtime. Mm-hmm. With Lindsay and Lena and Caroline on Monday night,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken. And they asked, like, what did you guys do when you were away? And I said, I just kind of zoned out.
watched Backdraft on repeat.
Yeah, yeah. I did.
They were so disappointed in your answer. They were expecting you to say something like, you know, I really took a moment to reflect on my career, where the industry is going, perhaps other creative outlets that I could pursue. And you're like, I watch a lot of TV.
Yeah, I really just zoned out for like 7 weeks.
Yeah.
Not in a depressive state sort of way. It was just, and it wasn't quite achieving a
like moment. Cameron Fry and Ferris Bueller's.
Yeah, and I definitely wasn't achieving Zen or anything. I just zoned out. I just didn't really think about anything for 7 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I highly recommend it.
You never had any panics? Too cool for those?
No.
What edibles are for.
Yeah, like I was fully cognizant of my situation.
I had a lot of panics, just not related to work.
Yeah, that's right. Hunger? No, I just didn't. Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I was like, I have a very uncertain future, and I just didn't ever reach the full level of panic. When people ask me, I'm like, I just kind of zoned out.
I had one panic.
I know you did.
Just one day where I was like, oh my god, what am I gonna do here? And we were thinking we could put together a podcast.
Right.
But then, like, we're idiots.
We didn't know a lot.
We'd be like, then we'd have to do all the business side. We'd have to find sponsors and all that sort of thing. I just want a job where we can go in and everything will be prepared for us and we can just talk on the radio about the Canucks.
I may have looked at the possibility of becoming an Uber driver.
Yeah.
May have looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
And a Starbucks barista. Those were things that I was dealing with at the time.
You could have just run away.
You know what I did?
Run away.
I shouldn't lie. I did do something like tangible and useful and productive during the time off. I got my C license from Canada and BC Soccer for coaching.
Oh,
yeah.
Professionals.
Is that difficult to do?
It was
I'm not trying to
what's
like
a C
slight
license.
You, like,
what does the C stand for?
Like the great, well, there's C, B, and A.
Oh, okay.
Right. So this is like the entry level into being a certified coach.
Okay.
You just kind of
are you going to go for it? Are you going to go for the A?
I don't know. This one.
You've already got your C.
Right.
Next would be B.
I feel like the C is an appropriate letter for my overall life and approach. Was it hard? It was very time consuming.
Okay.
Yeah. It was very time consuming. Like I knew what I was doing, but there was a lot of work that needed to be done and a lot that went into it. But at the end of it, I felt like I accomplished something. That was good. Like I didn't feel like it was like one of those safety certificate courses that you have to take in the beginning of a job where they're like, just don't blow yourself up and you can get the certificate.
Just an online test.
Right. Yeah, it was more involved than that. There was a lot of components.
There are some downed power lines. Should you A, approach the power lines, or B, call BC Hydro?
I'm like, A? I'm a self-starter. I like to fix things myself. Okay. Ask us anything.
Well, I think we should just review for anyone catching up right now. The Vancouver Canucks do have a COVID outbreak on their hands. It's been reported that staff. So if you're in your car right now and you're on your way to work, you're taking the kids to school. If you're taking the kids to school, first of all, you're late. And the kids are going to be tardy.
Got to hustle.
But I don't think the Canucks are going to have a game for a little while. They were supposed to try and resume April 8th. That's on Thursday of next week. And that would have been 4 postponements, including the Calgary game that they were supposed to play and didn't play. They were supposed to play Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesday. Those games have also been postponed. So that's a total of 4 games. If they've got 8 players that have tested positive with COVID, I imagine those guys are out for a while. 2 weeks? See, I don't want to say anything because I don't 100% know the rules, right? But I imagine those guys are out for a while. That's a big chunk of their roster.
So from what I understand, they would need 2 negative tests from everyone that's tested positive,
correct,
plus the players who have been in close contact before they can resume any sort of on-ice activity.
Right.
So until that happens, we are in a holding pattern.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey had 10 players at one point test positive in what would be considered an outbreak. Dallas, 14 at the beginning of the season. So they did, in fact, get into the teens. So they returned to practice. like 2 weeks basically into the season. And the Stars did training camp. They had 3 days of training camp. Then the outbreak happened, and then they got shut down for like 10 days to 2 weeks. So there's a lot kind of up in the air because, as Dom mentioned, like it's not about...
It's going to be so complicated.
It's going to be each individual case, right?
And it's going to be so complicated for the Canucks to finish their season, just a scheduling nightmare for the league, just because at least the Dallas and the New Jersey situations were at the beginning of the season. So they had more runway to switch things around. Season's almost over.
Don't you guys think, though, that if those games at the end of the year don't affect the standings in any which way, like let's say they may not play them.
I have
exactly.
wondered about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they have to play teams that are in the playoffs, if the teams in the playoffs can't move up or down, there's no point in playing those games.
But they would probably, they would probably matter more for the four teams. The Canucks don't have any more games against Montreal, but they have games against Toronto, Edmonton, and Winnipeg, and those teams could be fighting for playoff seeding.
I think if it was a game...
They could just do it by points percentage at that point.
Right. If it's a game between Vancouver and Calgary, hypothetically, and both have been eliminated, that's the final game of the year, May 8th, right?
No school today. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think... Right.
It's a holiday.
Nobody's late for school today.
That's true.
Thank you all.
Except the Keeners.
Right. Thank you all for this week. It's been fantastic. We love being back on the air. We're super stoked to be back on Monday. Yes, we're going to be in, even though it's another holiday day. Coming up, it's Rintoul and Sermon. Then you've got your regular programming throughout the day. I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Brough. This has been Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650.